This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today we have a special guest with us, Russell Simmons. I'm going to give you a brief bio on Russell. So Russell was born and raised in Houston, Texas, and has been an active in real estate since buying and renovating his first home at 21 years of age. While earning his real estate license, in the past 34 years, Russell has acquired a working knowledge of real estate and construction while renovating many properties for rental and resale throughout Houston, but primarily in historic Houston Heights, where he was named Renovator of the Year in 1993. This experience has enabled Russell to build a private portfolio of over 350 apartments in the Houston area that he has owned and operated in addition to several office buildings and industrial properties. Russell's combined experience as a real estate investor and real estate broker gives him a unique perspective to the desires of the investor that he has supported and acquired property for in the past 25 plus years. Russell is one of the few Houston brokers that is willing and has the working experience to support investors that are looking for their first residential rental, industrial warehouse, office, or apartment complex, or a seasoned investor looking to expand or divest their portfolio. Russell is an active member of the Houston Association of Realtors, Houston Apartment Association, and a graduate of the Real Estate Institute and the University of Houston. Russell is president of CREN, the Commercial Real Estate Network of Houston, and on the University of Houston Executive Advisory Board for the Bauer College of Business. Russell's faith, family, and integrity are the cornerstone to his life and the basic principles that he brings to every transaction. Russell has been a member of Second Baptist Church since 1983. And Russell, love your extensive background, and that's kind of why we brought you on the show today, is because you've been through this, right? The recession's here, and you were in the 80s we talked about, and again in, what, 2008? When was it, eight? And right, here we are right. Again. So, sure. But before we get started, like, how did you have a passion for real estate? What made you get started into real estate?
I don't really know. I mean, the joke is I grew up in a flower shop. My parents had a flower shop over off of Telephone Road. So, you know, those were the days of just survival. So I knew I didn't want to sell flowers on Telephone Road. At 16, an answer to an ad in the newspaper about somebody selling land in Wimberley. Didn't know where Wimberley was, but answered the ad. The guy flew me to Austin, picked me up, drove me out to Wimberley. And this was a time where interest rates were very high. You couldn't give land away. So they would sell land to a 16-year-old if he had $2,000 to put down and could pay $149 a month. So that's what I did. So I don't know if it was a passion, but that's kind of how I got started. Maybe it was a way to escape from the flower business. Not sure. That was the early days.
Well, that's a great story.
Sure.
Yeah. So, why don't you tell us, okay, so you were in it in the 80s. Tell us, and you talked about the interest rates now or back then. What were the interest rates back then?
Well, in 1980, 18%, 18 to 21%.
Wow. So give it in perspective, right?
Yeah. And we're not there with the interest rates, but in the '80s, inflation rate was 13.5. The inflation rate today is 8.5. So, and creeping up. Correct. So I see some similarities. Our inflation was caused by lack of oil. Uh-huh. We kind of got a lack of oil today. I guess the biggest difference is our market is so much bigger now. Mm-hmm. I'm not expecting the doom and gloom that we had back in the late 70s and early 80s, but it's a great time to be an investor. I mean, when the market changes and consumer confidence changes, then that's a great time for investors like ourselves to step in.
That's awesome. So, I mean, yeah, just can you tell us some of, things I think with your experience and what you've seen over the years, like, you know, to be honest with you, I think there's majority of the real estate investors out there have not gone through a recession. If you really look at, we've been a part of a lot of mastermind groups. And if you ask the majority of them, they've only seen the last 10 years. So they've only seen this massive run up. And so they don't really have a clue, but what to expect. But can you give us some insight of kind of, how you navigated a lot of these different, you know, in the 80s, 90s, and then maybe 2008, how you navigated some of those and things to watch out for.
Well, I think we have to be different than consumers. We can't be scared. Mm-hmm. We're not consumers. We're real estate professionals. We have to have confidence in our own ability. So I feel like my success over the years has kind of come from being opposite the market. Mm-hmm. When residential is too strong, we buy commercial. When commercial is too strong, we buy residential. And then we kind of stay in our little sweet spot. $500,000 to $2.5 million is our spot. Hmm. That's more money than most. Yeah. Most, you know, everyday investors don't want to be in the $500,000 range. And mm-hmm. most large investors, $2.5 million is too small. So we have our little niche there, but the most important thing is understanding the history. People still need a place to live. Thank God we're in Houston, Texas.
Mm-hmm. Right. Market.
So now's not a time to panic. I think now's maybe a time to start buying pretty strong again.
Yeah.
I agree.
We usually ask this question, you know, at the end, but I thought it was relevant now because of what we're talking about. But, you know, if you could go back to when you were in your 20s and start all over, what advice would you give yourself for today? Like what would, you know, over those 30 some years of investing, what advice would you give to yourself?
Well, first of all, I'm not a detailed person. So I think I sent y'all a little bit old resume of mine. So, I mean, this is my 43rd year.
Oh, wow.
We've changed churches. We're at Bayou City Fellowship now. So I love it. But, you know, all the other stuff was about the same, even though we've gotten out of the apartment business, mainly in industrial and commercial, and still doing some residential and ranch. But if I could go back, I would buy more.
Yes.
You try to stay within yourself and you just don't. Well, people didn't share information back then like they do today. Mm-hmm. There was no masterminds. There weren't groups. There weren't people that were willing to help. There weren't podcasts. There weren't all these things where you could listen to people and kind of pick up on some ideas. But
right.
I bought a lot. I should have bought a lot more.
Yeah.
That's one thing that we say.
That's probably our biggest one as well.
Yeah. And we have very similar backgrounds.
I know. I was reading your background. I was like, oh, wow, we have a lot in common. Yeah. That's pretty cool. I mean,
we bought our first rental property at 19 and then, you know, throughout college and then and worked our same way. And we've been at this a really long time, not quite as long as you have, but we've been at this. And, you know, the one thing that we always say is like when we get asked that question is, yeah, we would have bought more. So I remember when we got into the turnkey model, we were buying homes, which you're familiar with the area, but like Aldine Westfield and
Spring, Texas.
1960. Sure. And I was buying them for
$30,000
back then in 2010. Sure. And I could have bought hundreds of them. And I was like, we would buy tens at a time and we were nervous. We were like, well, we're going to put all these rent, you know, tenants in these homes. And then are we going to really be able to move them all? Anyways, it was today, looking back at what I paid, what I'll buy. I just bought one in there. And what I paid for it today was, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
10 times it.
But in our defense, though, also, had we bought more, would we have been able to hold on to them? Mm-hmm. Would we have been able to find the tenants? So, yeah. You know, it's fun to look back and say, woulda, coulda, shoulda.
You're right.
I know y'all's success today. I know how many starts y'all have got. I know your model. Mm-hmm. You know, so sometimes investors, we have to just pat ourselves on the back and say, hey, we've done a great job. We're doing a great job. And you know, all is well.
100%.
That's a great. Yeah.
Love that. Yeah. You know, Russell, what are some lessons maybe that you've learned along the way, right? Going through all this. And maybe we have a lot of, you know, new investors, seasoned investors as well, but in some that haven't been through it yet. And so what advice would you give them?
Well, I start with the very basics. You know, if you don't own your own home, you need to. A lot of pundits or really smart people, or at least they tell us they're really smart, say it's a bad investment. Well, your own home is a bad investment if you work for, you know, GE or Wells Fargo, you're going to get transferred across the country in 2 years. But if that's not the case, if you're going to be in Houston, Texas, you know, buying your own home is the best thing to do. We built our nest egg off of moving every couple of years. Uh-huh. We homesteaded the house. and were able to sell it and make a lot of money and not pay any tax on it. So that's the first thing, you know, own your own home, make it your homestead. Then maybe if you're single or you have a strong wife like mine, you know, maybe you move into a duplex and you rent out one side, or you buy a fourplex and rent out the rest of it. Mm-hmm. It's just all about having the income, getting the experience with tenants. You know, start small. Mm-hmm. I like talking about, you know, I'll do a presentation, a group will come, you know, a couple will come up to me and act like that they're not worthy of speaking to me because I've, you know, had this experience, and they say, oh, you know, thanks for taking a minute with me. We only have 10 houses, but what would you recommend that I do? It's like, people, you own 10 houses. that's 10 more than most people. Yeah. Pat yourself on the back, you know, just keep moving forward, because, you know, within a year, 10 can become 20 or 30 or 40 or 50. I mean, mm-hmm. it's not incremental like people think. I mean, you don't necessarily go from your home and one rental property directly to number two, number three. You know, you might go from the one rental property and buy, you know, a 10 unit apartment complex. Who knows? I mean, right. The sky's the limit in our market.
Yeah. That's awesome. And I love your attitude and especially with a lot of these questions. We have a motto that we around our office is see the good, and you really sure. model that really well. Yeah. You see the good in a lot of situations. So just off the few questions we've even asked you so far. So, but, you know, let's talk about the market where we are today, you know, kind of where do you see things trending? You know, I know we're not putting you on the spot but if
Russell had a crystal ball,
what do you think the rest of this year and then kind of 2023, where do you think things are headed?
Mm-hmm. Well, rates are going to continue to go up. I mean, the people that really know mm-hmm. Seem to think that we're going to see 8.5% this year. For a guy that saw 18 to 21 and first property was owner financed at 12%, that doesn't scare me. But is it positive? Is it negative? Well, for the general consumer, it's probably negative, but people are going to have to start purchasing what they need to live in, not what they want to live in. I mean, I've seen so many, you know, young married couples, no kids, buy a 5-bedroom, 3.5-bath house with a pool in Katy mm-hmm. because they could, mm-hmm. not because they needed to. So right. people are going to have to start buying what they need. Mm-hmm. Our demand is down, but our inventory is up. So that's a positive thing. But sellers are going to have to be more creative. Prices are probably going to come down for a little while. Mm-hmm. But once again, you know, we're in Houston, Texas, and it's a great opportunity for investors to pick up some better deals. The deals are going to have to stand on their own a little bit more. People have kind of been addicted to 3.5-4% financing, mm-hmm. unless they're borrowing hard money. And so, you know, things are just going to kind of come back into what I consider should be the norm. The past 10 years have been kind of artificial on the rates.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think, I guess they might not have a choice, but do you think I think that's going to be the hardest thing, is that gap between people truly facing, like what you said, with like the couple that at one time could afford that, but now they're going to, you know, have to face reality. And that's not what truly they can afford today. So if they were to go out and buy it, but like that gap in that period between, I guess, you know, having to come to that new reality, you know, can be a pain. Like, I just don't know if we live in a society that just wants instant gratification. Right. And
we've been spoiled. We've been spoiled.
So like, is that, you know, I don't, you know, is it too much pressure politically, mm-hmm. you know, to allow that?
It's going to be interesting after the midterms, what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we got used to $4.05 a gallon gas for a short period of time. Mm-hmm. Did we like it? No. Did we still drive to where we needed to mm-hmm. go? Yes. Was it painful? Yes. I think that's going to be the same thing with housing. You know, you're just going to have to budget for those types of things. I've already heard people talking about buying down their rate. You know, they've got mm-hmm. the cash and mm-hmm. they want to buy down the rate. I've heard people talking about adjustable rate mortgages, mm-hmm. which became popular in the 80s and hurt a lot of people in the 90s because they just didn't have a ceiling, or they didn't refinance when they could. So, you know, as an investor, we have to pay attention to everything. You're not an economist, but you got to pay attention. If you get a chance to refinance, you know, you need to. You just can't be totally focused on real estate without looking at the global picture.
Totally agree. Yeah. You know, give us some advice. I mean, you talked a little bit about this on what we need to be doing, but in order to survive, you know, this recession, give some tips, maybe some that investors should, practical tips for investors to survive this recession.
I would say if you can keep your existing tenants, you should. They probably, you know, at the next renewal, you could do a little bit of bump and tell them that, you know, you're trying to cover your higher taxes, which are higher, and your insurance, which is higher, and they would understand that. But be careful. You don't want to lose them.
Right.
They might be hard to replace.
Yeah.
You know, I don't believe so much that I read. I mean, I hear that rents are through the roof. I don't know that I believe that. I think rents have been a little stagnant. Back when I had all the apartments, which, you know, I got out of apartments completely in 2008, which is a long time ago, but I would read in the paper, you know, occupancy was 97% across the board and I'm sitting at 80. And then I would read that, you know, they're 80 right. and declining and I'm at 97%. So everything that I hear and read from the news, don't let them scare you. Divide by two. And that's probably what reality is that day.
Yeah, so, that's so true. We say that all the time, huh? Watch well, you just where you're getting your information from. Yeah,
the headlines are—they're just attention grabbers. But I mean, it just asking you—you know—your opinion, what you saw, going back to the '80s. What was it before it got up to like 18%? And what time period did it shoot up? You know, did it rise that rapidly? Was it anything like today, or was did it incrementally go up a lot slower?
Well, I don't want to be too political,
but,
you know, there was a Democrat in the White House. We got sideways with OPEC and they dropped their oil production. So we had an oil crisis. We actually were in line to get gas. You can only get gas on odd or even days, depending on the last number on your license plate. Y'all probably didn't live through that and don't remember that. But, so that was the start of inflation, a lack of oil, just oil went high. There was a shortage of it. Inflation went rampant. And then the interest rates just followed along. So, you know, the Fed's job is to stop inflation. And they do that by raising the rates. I don't know if we'd ever see that again. I'm not an economist, but if we were to settle in on 8.5 or 9% over a period of years, it wouldn't surprise me, but it's hard to tell what Washington is going to do. Like I said earlier, I mean, the rates that we had were artificially low and, you know, might be one of the reasons we're in the situation we are today.
Yeah. And as far as real estate back then and prices points, I know Houston took a beating in the 80s, but as far as like maybe on a national scale, what happened with real estate prices across the board and demand and stuff, you know?
Demand was slashed in half. I think in 1980 we went from selling, I mean, a crazy number, 4 million homes went down to 2 million homes, which, you know, is nothing compared to what you just do in Houston now. But people just couldn't afford them. So that's where, you know, my first experience in owner financing, I mean, the gentleman that I bought the house from over by Hobby Airport, I guess he had lost his wife. He wanted to move to the country. He couldn't give his house away. And the only way he could get rid of it was to owner finance it. And, you know, 12% was the number. He was happy to sell it and I was happy to buy it. It's kind of one of those things, you know, people go out and buy a car and they don't know what the interest rate is. They just say, how much is it going to cost me a month?
Yeah.
Well, I knew how much it was going to cost me a month. It was like $440 a month to buy this house, which was a poor example of a house. It was a two-bedroom, one-bath, window units, bad roof, bad foundation, but it was mine. So, you know, glad to get it at 12%.
So, you know, we don't actually have a lot of people on the show that do, you know, we've had several people that have done, you know, apartments and big syndications with apartments, not a lot of commercial, industrial. You know, what, on your opinion, can an investor in with your, you know, experience, do you recommend them starting in residential and moving up to commercial, or can they leap residential and go right into commercial? And I guess kind of the do's and don'ts or, you know, advice you would give, you know.
Sure. In that. Are a lot of the people that listen to your show licensed, or is it half and half?
Probably half and half.
Yeah.
Okay. Probably more real estate investors or entrepreneurs. Yeah.
I mean, for a licensed realtor, you know, residential is a little bit easier. That's where I started. Mm-hmm. The paychecks are smaller, but they come quicker. It's just easier to get traction. Mm-hmm. I bought my first building because I needed a place to run my office. So you do things for a reason. I mean, if somebody owns a business today and they're leasing their commercial space, they're the ones that need to buy.
Yeah.
I mean, owner occupants are what banks are looking for. They would much rather loan to an owner occupant than a investor any day of the week. So that's a quick, you know, if you're running a business, the story I tell, hey, if you need, you know, 5,000 square feet of warehouse space, we'll buy a 15,000 square foot warehouse and lease out the other 10,000 square feet. Mm-hmm. At least, you know, you're going to pay the rent to yourself for the 5,000 square feet. So that's a bonus, but
right.
I think it's just kind of a natural progression. Mm-hmm. The first apartment complex I bought was 40 units, and I sold probably two or three rental houses to raise the cash to do that. It was just a natural progression. That's kind of where the passion kicked in. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, can you go to the next level? What's the next level like? Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is, you know, the basics of it don't really change. Mm-hmm. You know, real estate is real estate. It's dirt with different improvements, whether it's a house or a warehouse or an office building. And now we've kind of circled back around after all these years and buying just dirt, which I said I would never do.
Going back to when you were 21, right?
Sure, sure.
Well, you know, you talked about what's next, right? So I want to know what Russell's next is. What are you looking to accomplish in the next maybe 5-10 years from now?
You know, want to stay active. I talk about not doing the commercial brokerage for other people anymore. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, most of my clients are great people that I love and have treated me well, and they're very easy to work with. So telling them no might be hard, but we have transitioned out to the country. We bought in the past 3 years, three different ranches, one for our personal use, and then we saw some opportunities and picked up another one. You know, that's the thing, as you get experience, it gives you the confidence to, you know, I didn't mess this up. Let me go over here and see if I can do that again. So we're experiencing now, lots of success with the country property, mm-hmm. but we're not the only ones doing it. Mm-hmm. And so now there's competition, and we usually move opposite of our competition.
Yeah.
Case in point, we were heavy in the Heights before it was the Heights. I would like to say we started investing in the Heights in the 80s because we were so smart, but we went there because it was cheap and we could afford it and it was historical and we liked it. So did dozens of deals, and then you get priced out of the area. So then you move to Oak Forest, and then you get priced out of the area, and then you move to Garden Oaks and get priced out of there. Then you move to Spring Branch and get priced out of the area. So 3 or 4 years ago, we looked back and Edo was a word that I kept hearing all the time. And Edo is a very small market, but the East End is a large market. So we went over there. It reminded me of the Heights 30 years ago, emerging, lots of pressure, you know, people wanting to move in close. So we did 7 or 8 deals in the East End. We flipped a few, we renovated and resold a few and kept a few for rental. And then we got priced out again. So, you know, you just have to kind of stay active and continue to look for the emerging markets as you see them. You got to talk to people. That's another big thing. I mean, I get deals from just talking to people, as basic as driving down the street and seeing an elderly person, you know, somebody actually older than me, maybe struggling to roll their garbage cans to the street. Stop, help them out, have a conversation, see what's going on. And not that I need that to pay off, but in a lot of cases, you know, just say, hey, I'm your neighbor. I have a rental down the street. Here's my card. And I've gotten, you know, industrial deals that way. I've gotten house deals that way.
Wow.
That wasn't my intention, but I think it comes back to, you know, going to, being a good person, mm-hmm. doing what you say you're going to do, and then stopping and having a conversation, you know, not hiding behind a computer and thinking there's deals in the computer. That's the start, but that's not where the deal's really made. It's on the street in front of people.
It's absolutely
love
right.
it. Yeah.
Going back
love
to
that.
The fundamentals.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So talking about like fundamentals, how did you over the years balance work, life, family? I think you know, it's always a question we want to know as entrepreneurs and real estate investors, how did you, any tidbits for balancing those? Or maybe, and I think there's sometimes you're unbalanced because of for certain seasons, but in life, but you know, stay married and raise a family and all that while working.
Sure. Well, very important to me. Mm-hmm. Obviously, my wife and I have been together for 43 years.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. She stayed home to raise our children for about 15 years and then kind of started her design business. And now it's design and construction. And she does most of our construction now because she's a detailed person and I'm not. But
so she's the, you know, the reason for the success there. Yeah,
pretty much. But you know, I don't spend a whole lot of time telling people how busy I am. You know, people say, oh, can we meet for 30 minutes? I know how busy you are. And it's like, well, I'm not really that busy. I mean, in reality, I think we all goof off a lot, mm-hmm. especially in real estate. You know, my wife comes home at 2 and I'm watching Bonanza. She's not really happy. That's the way I roll.
Yeah.
But then if I'm negotiating a contract at 10 o'clock at night, you know, that's the way that goes. So we just need to work when we have work. We need to enjoy family when we're not working. I coached all my 2 children in sports, never really missed an event. That's the beauty of real estate. Mm-hmm. We can tell people, no, we can't meet at 2, but we can meet at 6. Mm-hmm. And then, like I tell my children now, when they say, oh, you know, it's hard to get around to this and that because of the kids, I tell them, you know, our time as parents is between midnight and 6 a.m.
Yeah.
I mean, if we have to ugly it in, I mean, if we have to finish that contract or we have to do whatever it is that we do, that's our time, because mm-hmm. from 6 to midnight is their time mm-hmm. in a way. So you can have both.
Yeah.
You know, you can make excuses of not having time for family, but I don't think that's, in my case, that's not correct.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of time for work and for family, especially now. I'm a real goof off now. So.
Any get into the family business, real estate business, or
that was my
kids?
Question.
Yeah. Daughter is, works for a commercial group. I held her license for a while. She worked for Harris County in the real estate department and did a bunch of, Harvey buyouts. So she kind of got burned in by fire and did a really great job.
Mm-hmm.
And then she talked about coming with me, but she was at a point where training was important, and I'm not a teacher. I'm a storyteller. So we both kind of decided to go work for a commercial group, which she's doing. Our son is in technology and doing well, but I think that at some point in time, we might all come together. You know, technology is important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real estate, the daughter is very personable. The wife is construction. And then I'll be the guy that watches Bonanza
while they're working.
Yep, fit in somewhere. I might have the money. Maybe I'll have the funding for the deals. I'm not sure.
That's awesome.
That's amazing. Well, I love your story. I love your energy. And just the first time we met at the one of the events, I think it was the annual real estate market update. But you're amazing, and your wealth of knowledge. I appreciate you being on the show today.
Sure. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And if there's anything we can ever do for you, please let us know. But we thank you for your time today, and I know our listeners got a ton of knowledge and experience, and as they navigate some of this rough waters that we have ahead, but we really appreciate it.
Well, y'all just make sure that once we go off the air that y'all pat yourselves on the back and remind yourselves that you're doing a great job and you're building a great family business, and that's pretty impressive.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank Russell. You. Appreciate yeah. that.
Thank you very much. Yep.
Y'all so, take care.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Uh-huh. See ya.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkle. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talk, talk, talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.